Very welcome back to Lifeline here on this Monday morning. It's coming up to 2 minutes past 10. I should be joined on the line now by Tosh Lavery. Good morning to you, Tosh.
How are you, Debbie?
How are you this morning?
Good.
Good, good. Now, Tosh, you recently have published a book and you're going to talk to us a little bit about this, but you're still involved with Searching for the Missing. How's that going?
It's going well enough. You know, like, we're a voluntary organisation. We work mostly off the phone and the Facebook and... You know, and as we say, it's confidential, people ringing in that, you know, helping out. But sure, look, everyone sees what's going on out there now. There's a couple missing in Dublin here at the moment.
There seems to be a lot missing, Tosh. Every time you open Facebook, there's somebody else missing. And we can't say, do you know whether they've been found? Or there's never a lot of update whether they've been found. Now, sometimes you do get a notice up saying they've been found, which is great. But sometimes you don't. So how many people are missing?
The thing about Facebook and that is all voluntary. I mean, that's not an official guard file or anything like that. And it's people like they're doing, you know, they're different groups out there, like, you know, and they put up photographs. And then, in fairness now, there was a chap missing yesterday or the last 2 days and was put up last night. He was found, you know.
Mm.
So, a lot of the lads that are on Facebook and have put it back up when there is someone found. But then, with the Garda missing persons one, I think there's an awful lot going on there in the press office that some of the stuff's not put out there because there's a whole regime of what they have to go through before they put up a picture. Whereas, we as groups and Facebook, you know, people just put up the picture. Mm. You know, if a family just send them a picture, it just goes up. There's no such thing as having to get forms signed and this, that, the other. Now, I can appreciate that. That's all to deal with, you know, repercussions afterwards if you printed the wrong picture or whatever. But Facebook seems to be the way to go because, believe it or not, people have been found through Facebook. And I even see the odd, you know, which is what I would like to get out of hand altogether, but the odd little animal there.
That's true.
And like, to do with everything, but look, Coolock was has suffered a long time for the years. Plenty of lads out there missing, you know, and like we could see recently they're now here in around Ballybor and Cavan, but they're Dublin men that were found. And some were found and some were not. Went missing. Ballybor's at Ballyjames up in Virginia. Like a Blanchestown lad there, he's living in Ashbourne. He went missing there for a few weeks there in Virginia and then he was found in the lake. And then there's another man, Jerry Daly, was found after 3.5 years. And then those two lads found out on an island. And they were all murdered. Like, I live here in Blanchestown, and 200 yards from my door, there was a man machine gunned there last week. 200 yards from my door, I come walk to the scene, and some person came around with a machine gun. And a machine gunned the wrong fella.
Scary, scary, some of the things that are happening. But people who are saying a lot more, maybe because of Facebook and because it's instant and we can see exactly like within a few minutes who's gone, which is a great thing as well because, as you said, a lot of people have been found through Facebook as well. But is there
because, listen, Andre, all you ever got before, lads, was a little piece in a corner, a 28-year-old man with a blue jumper and brown jeans.
Mm.
You weren't getting even photographs.
That's true.
But they are, I will say this about official dump. It has got very good because every time crime call is on now, they do a detailed case on a missing person. You know, you will see it all. Every night now, crime line is on. You know when that crime line is on, or on television. They are making a big effort to pick out one or two cases.
Well, that's true.
And the cold case unit inside, I know, are beavering away, working away on certain cases. But they can't be publicised either because they're going back over files, new bit of info. And something will pop up on it, you know. But look, 99% of the time out there, you're depending on a bit of information.
Yeah.
Look, for any of the cases,
the
it doesn't matter. You know, or to get a lucky break. You know, like, there is people in your area of your radio there now who know... who are there this morning, sitting down, listening to this programme, drinking a cup of tea, who know the whereabouts of some of them people that went to Coolock. They are. There's no point about talking about it. I think there's 5 or 6 criminally missing out there. You know?
Really?
I know of other ones, but they are. And the people themselves know out there and are sick of listening to it. And even Amy Fitzpatrick is always coming up now, you know, and then Dean dying and...
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot. Look... there's a lot of this going on. I think, myself, you're right, that it's Facebook that's telling us You know, and like that, look, it incorporates suicide, whether we like it or not. And that is gone out of hand altogether. Like, first of all, they go missing. They're missing for a while. Some of them are found and some of them are found dead.
And I suppose for the family, even if you find a body, at least it's some sort of closure. I mean, I think the last time we spoke, Tosh, was when that man was missing in Finglas, that older man. And he had since been found, his body has been found, which was very, very sad for the family.
But that was like, when you look at that as well, okay, it was great that Thomas Fitzpatrick was found and all that carry on. But look what happened. They had the body within 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Over in England. And there was a breakdown in communication. What went wrong? And he went to work for 6 months.
Oh, really? Oh, he was... Oh, I didn't realise that. No. I took that time to find.
As far as I was concerned, and this is only personally speaking, he was dressed in the clothes, some of the clothes that were on Facebook. Mm. He was washed up within 2 weeks of going missing. Suddenly, it's at least, if I'm not attending the line around Christine, I'm missing you, I'm not identified on June. Now, that was the breakdown between Ireland and England. Mm. Whether it was a breakdown in England not informing Ireland that they had human remains washed up on the coast.
Because there was so much out there looking, you know, there was a lot of people, there was posts, lots. Facebook, that was everywhere. And I said maybe it was just a breakdown between Ireland and England. And Tosh, for people who are listening this morning, once again, we just want to get it out there. If a loved one does go missing, the first point of call, I suppose, is the Gardaí, and then can they get in touch with yourself?
Yeah, well, look, we were a little helping going. We are small, as I say, out there. We don't get financially backed. We don't have money. And it's not about money, but look, as I said before, we have the National Missing Persons Day. When somebody goes missing, the first port of call has to be the Garda station. Yeah. There's no such thing now as waiting for 24 hours and all that. As far as I'm concerned, someone goes missing, the people themselves and the family, and these are the people that are most important. I don't know whether they're vulnerable or whether with the report or not. Now, they have to sit down and decide that quickly.
Mm.
And a lot, as far as I'm concerned, people that go missing are missing. But the problem at the moment, it was, in one time, the problem was about foreign nationals going missing near the airport and all this carry on. And it was mixing up. But now it's young people. They're going missing for 2 nights.
Mm.
They're going missing for a night. The young one's missing. The young one's missing there. These mobile phones are not being answered. Look. I think we have a different life out there now anyway.
It's a lot different. But if there is someone wanting your help, can you give a number out there?
Yeah, 086, my own number, 086.
Yeah.
895-6917. That's the helpline number, but it's my phone.
And you're, as you said, you don't get any government funding and you're trying to do this on your own. You're doing great work. You have been doing great work for the years.
But if you look at it, Debbie, if you look straight at it, if someone was missing in the morning, people get stuck, they don't know what to do. At least if you give them a bit of guidance, you tell them what to do and not to be jumping the gun and not to be printing off 1,000 posters and not to be doing this, you know, going. But people can go all around. The media are very good now at the moment with helping. And Facebook, I will say this out loud. The first thing I do was me. I'd make a page, Facebook page, and I'd put it out there and I'd get it all over the place. Because you'll be surprised the things that have happened because of pictures and information that's been put on Facebook. So I know people put up what they have for their breakfast and their dinner. I'm not talking about that. We use it strictly, well, I anyway do, strictly, for people that are missing or in trouble. You know,
and that's what it's good. Yeah, you're right, Tosh.
You know, even my own page is on Facebook. You can send me a private message on Facebook and, you know, and just
help.
Ask for information or ask for help. What am I going to do? Or this is the situation. Because some families, you see, have to sit down because some don't want the report, some don't want the report, some don't care, some do care. Just you know, like,
I know.
It's a very sensitive issue with missing persons, but. It can be complicated, but the one thing about you use the word closure, like it, at least if there's a body recovered, it's human remains, and you can go to a funeral. I'll tell you something, ambiguous loss is the big word. You're waking up every day and you don't know where someone is. I'll tell you one thing, your head will be wrecked.
That must be a terrible feeling, it must be horrible. But Tosh, we'll give your number again before the end of the show. But before I let you go, tell us a little bit about your book you've written.
Yeah, well, I wrote a book. Its name is called Tosh. It was doing very well the first 2 weeks there. It was number one. And I spent 30 years in the Garda diving unit. And I started off writing about, I grew up in Waterford and joined the guards and going to Temple Moor and going to the border, coming out, going into the diving unit, spending 30 years in the unit. And there's 23 chapters in it, and one of them is about alcoholism. And a lot of my first years in 1988 are about drink, when I walked and things that happened to me pre-marriage and things like that. And I haven't drank for 26 years, but I drank up to 88. So a lot of the book involves a good bit of that. And then I go from another extreme, then dealing with families, because when you're younger and you're out there and you're doing that, you're dealing with the body and the media and the machoism of the job and the whole lot. And you think it's about the person you're searching for, but sure, it's not. It's about the person left behind.
And that must have been very traumatic, Tosh, on you as well, like to do this. I know you love the work you did, and all through the times you've come in here, you've told me about your deep sea diving. But to find bodies, and, you know, it must have left an impact. Do you think that was kind of led to your drinking, or was it just you couldn't?
No, I said this in the book. It'd be very easy for me to use that as an excuse. I drank when I was 17, and it gave me an opportunity, all right, when I joined the guards, I suppose. A bit of freedom to drink, and then I suppose in the diving unit give you a free, because when you go down and you're a certain job and you're with fishermen and you're with people and families, and then you go to the pub, because in the early years that's the way everybody did. We went to the pub. There was no such thing as post-traumatic stress disorder, welfare. It was all dealt with in the pub. So it suited, you know, you're there and you're drinking away, and if you did have a few points, well, you'd have an extra few. And it led to that. No, I work with lads that never drank, or that drank slowly, or drank a little bit. But to be easy for me to, I would honestly say that the drinking factor kept me there for a long time, for the fact that I was travelling and going away. And that's another part that's in the book about being away from home and then your family suffering. Like, I talk about the Irish Army. When I look at these lads at Dublin Airport with babies in their arms, 2 weeks old, 3 weeks old, suddenly he's 14 and suddenly he's 20. I was overseas. All this about family grow up without you.
That's true.
And there's no one guiding you that want to stop you. I was like a runaway horse. I spent 30 years in the diving unit. No man should spend more than 10. And I should have been guided, but they're not. And to this day, there's nobody in there qualified or interested enough to guide you and tell you you should now move on to some other part of the force called cross-fertilisation. But you won't, because of the job, the very nature of the job and the amount of people who want to do it. Like, there's a sergeant in Coolock, he spent a lot of time in the unit with me, and someone was saying to me, he's going back. I know, but if he does, he does. But for me, you do so. You should only do so much in there and then go out. You know, from a personal point of view and from an emotional point of view, I think, like, when I look back over the book and over all the things and the amount of stories that were coming up in the book, and I realised, like, the amount of bodies that were involved in young people, and from 30 years, like, you know.
So it goes right through your life, you really, Tosh, when you started up to today.
Half your life, and then I continued after, I suppose. The book, look, went up to about that, and I only mentioned a small bit about my work after that. I helped families and some people, and, you know, the last two or three chapters about things, but mostly the book is about me growing up, joining the guards in Temple Moor, O'Malley's Midgets, we were called, 5'8". He reduced the height, Desi O'Malley. You can imagine 500 lads, right, in 1972, and everyone, most of them, had done their leaving and that. And the guards, the PNSI, as they're known now, and the British Army, had an influx of young people joining their organisations. They brought them in to flood the border with men. Like, that's all we were. So you look at a fella doing his leaving today, and 7 months later he's joined the guards, he's going to the border. Should we have a clue?
No, like,
we were
very young.
We were young lads.
Yeah,
and we're not programmed. Like, we didn't change overnight. I mean, I'm a young fella off the street. I was born in Waterford City in a corporation house. Sure, they didn't reprogram me until more than 4 months. Sure, I was as wild as any other man on the street, or as free as a young fella. And, you know, you went there and you joined the guards, then you had a bit of escapism.
Yeah.
And you were there as a kind of a pawn when you look back on it around the border. So when we went to mass, like, that time, everyone loved going to mass. So you'd obviously see a guard standing at the back of the chapel if he was walking the beat. Even in Coolock, I'm sure, if you look back, the guard would be beyond the beat and he'd go into mass. And it was great. He was going to mass during work. He was getting paid for it. Right? But when we were on the border, we'd do that, the patrol car go in and fell on the beat, my God, and we know no one else working, and I'm sure there was plenty of stuff on the move while we were in mass. You know, we look back, so we were pretty gobshite, the young fellas up on the border. And
so what inspired and you to write the book was just...
No, I always kept notes and diaries and this and everything you said as a book in you. And I always remember in 1981, I was on a course in Garda headquarters, and Dan Murphy, who was a former chief in the murder squad, and he said, it's wrong to go to your grave and bring all your experience with you. And I recently heard the Garda commissioner saying how when she joined the guards, the lads tried to get her to make sandwiches. And in the station, she wouldn't do it. Because she was the first woman in around there, like, you know. Well, we wouldn't have known that if you didn't tell us. Well, no one had known about me, the Garda Diving Unit, what went on. If you didn't write some memoir, there'd be no history if someone didn't write something about 1916 or whatever. So there'd be nothing there. Now, people have said it to me now, and Jesus, everyone has complimented me on the book. Every single person that I've met, I read it, about, and put up messages, they won't let it down. And the wives won't give it back to the husbands.
I must get a copy of it now and read it. It does. It sounds interesting. I've been looking on Facebook, and I'd say it's very, very interesting. I mean, your whole life seems very interesting, Tosh, what you've done, your work. Anyway, listen, Tosh, thanks for talking to us again today on Lifeline, and maybe you'll drop into us soon and bring the book in, Russ, and we'll talk more about that, okay?
Thanks, Debbie.
Thanks.